Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Now, the first question I'll take today is not really philosophy. It's a question of my personal taste. So I'm just going to zip through the answer. Do you like Europe? Why or why not? Yes, as a tourist, I like it. I like the parts of it that I've been to, which is not that much. I don't think I would like to live there as a permanent resident the way I'm living in America, but I'm not sure because right now America is deteriorating rapidly, and I don't know that much about certain corners of Europe which might be superior as a resident. In any event, I'm going to take the question only as what do I like as a tourist. And really, my standards come down to art, specifically sculpture, and food. If a country has what I regard as beautiful sculpture, you probably all know that sculpture is one of my top favorite arts. If it has some great sculpture, that is all I need to justify spending a week or so there just looking at it. And of course, also, I like food. In certain countries, our food, to my taste, more than other countries. I hate German food, for instance, which in my experience was all deep fried. But of the countries that fulfill what I said, without question, Florence in Italy is the most exciting place. It has the David. It has all kinds of sculpture. It's a paradise for someone who likes sculpture. And I like Italian food, so I would put that as number one on my list. France, a close second. It doesn't have as much sculpture, but it's France. And it's true that there is some, to me it's true, that there is some atmosphere in France that is distinctive. I find myself saying at different parts of France, yes, they're right, it really is unique. It really is better than every place else. Now, that's from a very limited tourist perspective. But I did see the Tales of Hoffman, the opera there, and I came out thinking that it will never be done this well as in France. I'm not an opera knowledgeable person, but there was something distinctive in the style, in the passion, in the artistic development. I never forgot France. And of course, there's many other parts of France that I like. Now, if I just jump to a few examples, those are my two favorite countries. I enjoyed one week in London, where a friend at my request, I was going to be there 9 days. I said I would like 3 major attractions each day, one morning, afternoon, and evening. And I did that for 9 days, 27 days. It was very exciting. Perhaps the high point was when I bumped into something in the waxwork museum, turned around and apologized, and it was a waxwork, but they're so real. And the diamonds and crown jewels and Buckingham Palace. It was exciting to see them once. I'm not sure that I would want to go back again. A special place that I like, but it's only for one trip, would be St. Petersburg in Russia. And that is exclusively because of the connection to Ayn Rand. I knew someone over in St. Petersburg. 2 people, actually. One a translator and one with great knowledge of the city. And they took me to all the places that they could find that either Ayn Rand herself was related to school that she went to, or the museum where she taught, etc., her home when she lived there. and all the places related to We the Living, the park where Kira and Andre met and so on. So it was very exciting. I would never want to go back the way I would have when I was younger to France or Italy, because it's pretty decayed. But because of that, I found the place very exciting. Let me just add that the best restaurant I was ever at was in St. Petersburg. And I bought the menu and brought it home, unfortunately in Russian, so I can't tell you what it is, but it was a banquet beyond any banquet I've seen, $25 for two people. So that always stuck in my mind. A few little places that I would add and then move on. Greece was very exciting. Again, not so much because of what it contains, but as what it did contain. Of course, Aristotle. And I remember very vividly a moment when the driver of the tourist bus pointed at a parking lot and said, "That is where the Lyceum, Aristotle's school, used to be." And I was so excited, we were taking pictures. And it turned out, in actual fact, it was just a parking lot. But the fact that it was in Greece, and for a moment you could think that's where Aristotle stood and walked and taught, made the whole thing really exciting. All the Greek islands also, I must say, I found beautiful. And I'll add, this is more, but I haven't been that traveled, so I'm really not giving you a fair impression, even of my impression, because I'm sure I would have impressions if I'd been to more places. But one which really surprised me was Shanghai, of course, in China, not Europe. I could not believe how beautiful, how gorgeous that city was, just looking out the window from the hotel. In fact, that's all I wanted to do. We were on a high floor with a big open window. Basically, it's like Las Vegas with incredible taste. Beautiful synchronization of colors. All the buildings are winking colors, mixture of colors. The boats going by on the river are like, they're like from Mars. They float. The whole spectacle is unbelievable. I wouldn't go back there just to look at it again, but it's a memorable, if you're in the neighborhood, look out the window someplace in Shanghai. That's all the time we're going to take on this one. Now here's a completely different question. I am a gay man, and it is incredibly difficult to find good gay men. He goes on to think that puts him in the category of Eddie Willers and Atlas Shrugged. And then he says, I find people that could be or could have been great, and I fall for their potential only to see that they hate their state. They don't want to realize it, or they don't know it exists. It frustrates me to the point of tears. And in effect, the question is, what can be done about this? First of all, this is not distinctively a gay question, because in both sexes, it's continually people ask, I want a person to love or have a sexual romantic relationship with. I've looked everywhere. I can't find it. Or I find someone who looks like they have the potential, but they are not what I'm looking for. This, by the way, has no relation to Eddie Willers. Eddie Willers' fate is not to be related to he's lonely, he can't find a lover or a friend. His fate is that he does not know how to live in a world that's falling apart. He's not a prime mover, and the prime movers have disappeared in the strike, and therefore he's lost. That is a completely different motivation. So the question comes down to, I want a certain kind of person in my life, and a 100% legitimate, almost indispensable question, and I can't find them. Well, in my years, I've had a little experience, by far the most successful way of doing it is computer dating. There are many different sites. And I think in some question period earlier, I gave some rules or tips, not that I know anything about it. I'm not a good recommender in how to make romantic connections. I haven't had that kind of experience. But people have given me what I have found are valuable tips. And I don't want to repeat all this. I'll give you just one. which I found actually worked. They said, don't expect that you will find anybody on the first or the second or the third date. And of course, you don't go out on dates at the beginning. You just have emails, and then you have telephones, and then you meet for coffee, etc. You know, each one that moves ahead to the next step. And the person told me that you will not meet the person that you want to see again until after 28 different dates. And I thought that was fantastic. And he claimed that that had been his experience and that until that time, you don't know exactly what you're looking for, exactly what puts you off. But at that point, you're completely ready and open. Now, I there's nothing mystical about 28, but the actual truth for what it means is I did find somebody I liked on the 29th date, although, you know, that could have been the power of suggestion. But I do think that you get a variety of people with all kinds of different traits, and you can learn to read the post that they put up. It's incomparably superior than the way we used to have to do it, was to go to a high school dance and dance with a few girls who were more or less pretty but didn't have much, and then the next time go to somebody's party. It was an agonizing, drawn out. Here, if you can read it, I think you have the best chance. I don't say it's easy, but that's what I would recommend, number one. All right, Mike Tyson was a wrecking machine in the sport of boxing, but he was also a rapist, liar, and thug, among other terrible things. Don't rational people have a responsibility to not support the likes of such a person if they know he upholds no good values, regardless of how supremely skilled he is in the one area? And I would say that's really a complex question, because in judging a person, you have to distinguish the work from the person. And that's very difficult emotionally, because if you highly admire the work, you naturally infer that there's something really good about the person that made this quality of work possible. And I think, in essence, that is true. There is something good. For instance, take Dostoevsky. Now, if you knew him as a person, I think you would be horrified at the way he behaved in his own life, and the immoralities he committed, and the incredible mysticism. But that doesn't change Crime and Punishment. You still have to say there was something in him over and above that craziness. The same is true of Wagner, for example. And look at Silicon Valley. If you find me somebody there you can really admire, you know, if you knew them, I think you would be more than, let's say, more than negative. But people are able to split themselves into the parts that can create and the parts that are negative. Now, just ask yourself as a question. Now, I know this is not true. This is not true. This is a hypothetical contrary to fact. Suppose you found out that Ayn Rand had committed to communism when she was caught in Russia, and that she had some sympathy to it in her life, although she scrupulously kept it out of her works. Now, I think in that case it's impossible, because you couldn't keep that kind of contradiction so consistent in your work. But if you found that out, you would still have to say, if the books are the same, is she's a great thinker and a great writer, but she's politically, very wrong, and that probably has to imply evasion on her part. Now, I repeat, I'm not saying that, and I hate to see how many websites are going to say Peikoff came out and says she was a secret communist. I'm saying you have to be able to distinguish a work from the author. Now, it's very important here is what is the negative that you are torn over. If it's a crime, then it should be handled by the law. And then you can very straightforwardly say, yes, this guy is good in this way. I like what he does. But on the other hand, he's a criminal and I hate him. That's not a contradiction on your part, because he is a contradiction and you are simply defining the two halves of it. It becomes much more difficult if it's a personal immorality that he's supposed to have committed, but nothing that is objectively provable. It's very common that about celebrities, rumors are launched by people who are jealous, people who oppose them, just people who like to pass negative rumors, which are very hard to verify. Very often, these come from people who hate success. Now, to go way back, if you remember Michael Jackson, I never believed that whole case that he was sleeping with all the boys in Los Angeles or whatever it is. I did not think they offered any objective evidence. And so I sort of like this thing, I mean, better than most of the ones today. I did not let all those, what I regarded as rumors, have any effect. I have to add, for honesty, that there are some, mostly movie actors, that I dislike so much on the grounds of their politics that I cannot make the separation. For instance, George Clooney or Barbara Streisand, they do their work very well from what little I know, but when I just look at George Clooney and think of what he's done to support Obama, it's impossible to think he's a good actor, for me. So that's the best answer I can give you on that one. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.